This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean MacDonald, and on each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan on to talk about Voyager. On this episode, my guest is Barbara Greenberg, a publishing professional who provides editorial services to publishing houses and independent authors. She hails from New York City. Most importantly, she is my best friend from New York City, who is here right now in my room with me while she helps me get better from my terrible fall that I took last month when I was in Europe. If you haven't listened to my other podcasts or you don't follow my blog, you won't know, but I totally tore up my knee while sightseeing in the city of Trieste in Italy. And I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to listen to the podcast where I talk about how that happened. But it was a thoroughly crazy experience, and I had to come right home to get knee surgery. And now I'm in my recuperation mode. I actually despaired of podcasting again for more, you know, the doctor said I need like approximately 2 months to recuperate from this knee thing. And it's very uncomfortable to sit at a desk for me right now. But I had this brilliant idea since Barbara is here and she is my friend and we both love Star Trek that we could watch an episode of Star Trek and she could be a guest on Voyager. So anyway, here she is, Barbara Greenberg. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Jean. I'm happy to be here with you in Portland.
I am happy you're here. Seriously, it's the best.
It is.
And I will point out that this episode of Voyager Revisited is being recorded right in my bedroom with Barbara sitting right next to me. So I apologize if you hear a little more of room noise or reverberation or whatever in the podcast, but this is what it is. It's either this or I don't podcast at all. And I want a podcast, and I also wanted to watch Voyager, and I want to watch it with Barb. So, Barb, before we get started talking about the episode, which we're going to discuss, I want to ask you about your first memories of Star Trek.
My first memories of Star Trek are the original Star Trek with William Shatner, and I loved it. My dad was a big science fiction fan, and so when the show came on, we, of course, as a family, all watched it.
Wow.
It was great. It was so different from anything else that was on TV at the time, really. And we loved it.
Yeah.
And I have been watching Star Trek in all its many iterations ever since.
That's like me. Like I remember watching it with my father, and I remember watching it because we're almost the same age. And
yes.
So we were little kids when the original series came out. Didn't you find any of those episodes scary? Like, I know the episodes that freaked me out when
there were episodes that were scary. Even the Tribbles in its own weird little way was like, oh my God, look at all those things in the wall. Is that going to happen at my house?
Oh.
But I don't think I found them like really, really scary. I found them very watchable.
Yeah.
I was like a total chicken when I was a kid and would not watch things like The Twilight Zone because that was too scary for me.
Yeah.
But I don't ever remember really watching Star Trek and being frightened. I just was kind of always interested in what was going on there and the amazing things that they were finding.
Yeah.
Because I have always, since I was a little child, wished that I could like go with them.
Yes. Yeah. Now, the one that, you know, always comes to mind for me that really scared the pants off me when I was a kid was the Doomsday Machine, which was, there was like that long tube out in space that just destroyed planets.
Maybe I must have rewatched that out. Yes, I don't remember that at all. That would have probably scared me.
Yeah, it wasn't like an alien. It was like this unstoppable force.
Where did it come from?
Nobody knows. That made it scarier.
That makes it much scarier.
Yeah, because who knows if there's more out there.
Yes.
Anyway, you'll be pleased to know that the Enterprise did manage to destroy it.
As the Enterprise always did manage to destroy the things that needed to be destroyed.
But it is one of the super classic episodes because Spock has a really big role. There's another captain or commander whose ship that they saved, or who they saved, but not his people because they were on a planet that was destroyed, Commander Decker. And Decker takes over the Enterprise and then
Spock has to like relieve him of his duties because Decker's just insane. He's like Captain Ahab.
Okay, now it's coming all and coming back to me.
Doomsday Machine is like the great white whale.
Yeah.
And he almost got this Enterprise killed. So anyway, well, that's Star Trek original series. We are here to talk about Voyager. So did you watch it when it first came out, like
on
TV?
Yeah? I did. I loved Voyager because there were such an amazing number of really interesting and strong female characters on
it.
And I liked it because even the men, by and large, were a little more evolved than they had been on, well, certainly on the original one. But I really loved the huge variety of characters and then the way that everybody started to pull together. Like there were all these disparate groups in the beginning, and then Janeway was such a great, you know, binding force, and how everybody kind of did what we all wish everybody would do, you know, learned how to live with each other, learned how to appreciate the good parts of everybody. And I just loved it.
Yeah. Yeah, like I knew about it, but for some reason, I think it was in the non-TV phase of my life.
You didn't have a TV?
I didn't have a TV, yeah. I was living with somebody who didn't like to let me watch pop culture TV. So anyway, yes, we'll forget about that.
That person is gone now.
But then I watched it. I binge watched the 7 seasons of Voyager when I was sick one time. And I was like, oh my God, this is so fun. I just couldn't stop watching it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's it. It's very compelling. It's such an interesting, I think such an interesting mix because it's definitely, you know, space opera. It's definitely futuristic. And yet it felt very kind of contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
And you could easily, if you are you or you or me, you could easily see yourself being part of that community.
Yeah.
And how interesting it would be and how much fun it would be to go exploring with those people.
I mean, I prefer my starship journey to be in the Alpha Quadrant with, you know, at least once in a while, you know, visits to space stations or, you know, vacation planets.
Yes.
And maybe meet some new people, not the same 140 people for 7 years.
Which does seem kind of like being with your family for too long. when you talk about like what episodes scare you, like that whole construct of being completely lost in space without your robot is kind of scary, you know? And I think that one of the interesting things about it was the way they used that to explore various kinds of human interaction and how you were feeling and how you grow and how you learn to depend on other people you might not have otherwise. And I loved that also about it. But yes, it was totally freaky that they were all out there and there was no way to get home.
Yeah, no, that is true. And speaking of which, the episode that we decided to watch. So when I proposed this idea, I wanted to think of like, well, what's an episode that, you know, I'm not going to pick a random episode. I want it, you know, as with other guests that I have on the show, something that's relevant in some way to the person or whatever. And in our case, well, we met in New York City working in the book publishing business. And I worked there for about 6 years. You worked there. You're still working in the book publishing business.
Yes, it has been.
And I had this like, you know, light bulb moment, which is like, oh yeah, there's a whole episode where the doctor gets screwed over by a publisher. So let's watch that and evaluate whether, you know, this is a thing.
How realistic it was.
How realistic was it? So this episode is called Author. And it's from season 7, like right towards the end. It is, there's only like 5 more episodes after this one, which is episode 20. So they are getting close to home. And in fact, the episode wouldn't work if they weren't close enough to home where they could communicate, you know, with Starfleet and with, you know, the Federation.
Right.
The idea is, I mean, the basic setup of it is that the Doctor has written a holo novel. It features a long-suffering hologram who is an EMH, and he's planning to submit it to a publisher, and the other characters are interested. Of course, Tom Paris, because he has written holo novels. I mean, he's known for creating, you know, these entertainments. I mean, they're not exactly books, so Paris fires up the holo novel and the holo suite. So, and when you're in the novel, you're in the role of the EMH, the holographic EMH. And he's like really appalled to see that the Doctor had a very thinly, you know, described Voyager and all of its characters, but they're all really rude or worse. And they're very anti-hologram and they're very mean to the EMH, which, as we know from watching the show now for 7 seasons, is not true. I mean, definitely he had some indignities he had to suffer, but yes, nothing like his holo novel.
No, I mean, like, ultimately they made it possible for him to move independently outside of the sick bay. So, yeah. But it is very funny because he's got his point he wants to get across, and he just totally misses the fact that he's making them all look like terrible people. But of course, these are the people he knows. So who else could he possibly draw on as like the basis for his characters? This is his world. He doesn't really have like a wider experience.
That's true.
And so it was interesting to see like how he made them all kind of villainous when in fact they are all, you know, sort of have this great camaraderie among them. But it was very funny to see him be so surprised that everybody was so angry yes. at him. Like, well, but where, you know, like, where else would I get my characters?
Yeah. Yeah. He was like, you know, oh no, this Lieutenant Marseille is nothing like you, Lieutenant Paris. Mm. It's just that, I mean, aside from like, you know, the looks a little bit, and he did great tweaks on the characters,
the mustache was awesome.
Tom Paris. And also he turned Chakotay into a Bajoran. He didn't show that for long, but I was like, what? You know, like, okay.
Wait, that's wrong.
And, of course they gave Janeway super dark hair. So she looked like scary. And I love that. Like, that's when you know it's totally going off the rails. I mean, is when there's it opens with the scene in sick bay, and the hollow doctor is trying to triage the crew members who are in various states of injury. And the Chakotay character is trying to bump Lieutenant Marseille to the front of the line, who has like a mild concussion, and says, I can't do anything about him. And then Janeway comes in and she's like, what is going on here? And he says, well, if I don't operate on this guy in the next 5 minutes, he's going to be dead. Janeway's like, okay, take down the force field. And then she's like, pulls out her phaser and she kills him. She says, okay, now he's dead.
Which should not be funny. And yet it was hysterically funny because, you know, she would never do that.
Obviously. Yeah. But I think when I see shows like this one, you know, in any of the Star Treks, and, you know, in anyone where they are having to play like cartoonishly evil characters, yeah, I think they're having a good time this week.
Yes. I think they must have had a hysterical time.
Yeah.
I like that 7 of 9 became this, you know, sex pot. She must have loved that because she's always so buttoned up, you know, like something totally different for her to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was pretty funny. And So you think it's just going to be a story about the doctor, you know, didn't realize he was going to piss everybody off with his holo novel. And eventually he, you know, comes around to realizing, yeah, I need to make some changes and make it less like Voyager. The whole time while this is going on is against the background that Voyager is now in contact with the Pathfinder station with Admiral Paris and with Reg Barkley, they can get like 11 minutes of time every day. Is that right?
Yes.
Before they lose the signal. So people are communicating with their families, and that's the B plot, where everybody is trying to, you know, jockey for time with their families, and also, you know, what happens in those family discussions, with Seven looking on, you know, who's Seven, who's like, who would I even talk to? So that's another, that's this separate plot. But that's how the Doctor makes contact with the publisher, the Bolian publisher, and that's also how Janeway finds out that the first version of his book that he was supposed to be tweaking before it was released has been released, because people are already seeing it back in the Alpha Quadrant, and Admiral Paris calls up, or whatever calls.
contacts Janeway.
Yeah, and is like horrified, saying that, how could you let the Doctor, you know, mess with your reputation like this? And everybody was like, oh no, he was supposed to have a chance to revise it. But, and that's when the crux of the plot comes forward, is that it said he's complaining to the publisher, and Janeway is there, and the publisher says, yeah, I'm not going to recall it.
We're just going with
what we got. But we're going with what we got. And Janeway's like, I don't think you have a choice. And the publisher says, like, yeah, actually, the Doctor doesn't have any rights because he's not a person. And I can do whatever I want. And I was like, whoa. Didn't you feel it was a left turn in the
episode? It was episode? A total left turn.
Yeah.
Because up until then, I was more in the mode of, oh, well, this is the scenario where the author will never actually finally let go of their book. And the publisher just decides at some point, like, okay, we've paid for it and we feel it's sellable, so we're going with this. And then the next thing you know, it has turned into like a human rights issue,
yeah,
which was really interesting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Very unexpected.
Yeah. So, I mean, so we didn't really talk about like favorite characters, but I feel like the Doctor is one most people's, you know, in their top two or three, because he's a great actor, Robert Picardo. And then his character is just so colorful.
Yes.
And he gets to do a lot.
He does. And because he's a hologram, he, like Seven of Nine, he has very few filters. So it's always so interesting when he just sort of like blurts these things out and people are like, what? What did you just say? So, yes, I love him. But honestly, I love all of them.
Yeah.
They're a really good cast. And I mean, I think that's true of most of them, even the series ones that did not necessarily work so well. One of the things that has always been so interesting about watching Star Trek stuff is that the characters are always very well drawn. They're not like cartoony characters.
Yeah.
The way they were in the first one, you know, which was the first one, and that was kind of the style of the times, I guess. But it's hard to pick a favorite character in the series because they had such a great group. And I think maybe partly because they were all so isolated together, they were developed maybe a little bit more than other characters where there was a more outward looking aspect to the adventures that they had.
Huh. Now that is interesting. I think I hadn't really thought about that before, but you know, the fact that they had kind of a one plot, you know, they basically had one plot overarching the whole thing, which is get home. And it's pretty specific compared to Explore New Worlds. And,
yes.
That the characters, you know, they could lavish a little more attention on the characters and have them change over time, because I think more than other series, as
yes,
you said.
Like, I think so.
I mean, the Doctor's the most well-known example of changing over time, because he went from zero, you know, to being the most,
yes,
you know, full-fledged person that, you know, they have, but I also think like Paris totally changed over time, and Torres, and I mean, you know, other character, and Seven, of course, Seven, that was
yeah,
a major plot
point. I think that Seven and the Doctor had the most change over their arc, mm-hmm. just because they started from such a sort of flat zero point. And it was such a surprise that they were both able to overcome these things, like you're a hologram, you were a Bork, you know, like Tom, like he was a very human, and it was great that he changed, but you always kind of assume that, you know, the human will have the possibility of changing because that's what literature is almost always about. but you know, these characters who came from a much different starting point still developed into these really interesting beings on their own, like not just because of their place in the context of the group, but as individual beings. Mm-hmm. They had, I thought, this, you know, the strongest level of change just because they started at the kind of more the zero point.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, so anyway, you get in this episode a classic Star Trek trial.
It was a good trial. I like that one.
Yeah, well, you know, I want Tuvok representing me if I ever have to.
If you ever have to go to trial, what you really want is a Vulcan.
A Vulcan.
Yes.
It's reminiscent of this Next Generation episode that's pretty well known, where Data is on trial of whether he can control his own person.
Yes.
That some scientist that wants to take him apart and he doesn't want to.
Yes.
And
that was a terrible episode. like so sad.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that they came back to this well of, you know, what about the rights of other non-human being beings? And, you know, obviously it went Data's way in the trial.
Otherwise.
But it was iffy. I mean, obviously they weren't, I mean, from point of view, he's the main character in the show. They weren't going to get rid of him. But I just recently rewatched it because I knew we were going to watch this. And I thought, yeah, this one is pretty rough.
It was scary, that one, just in terms of like, really, could they possibly send this in the wrong direction?
Yeah. So this trial was a little shorter partially because it was conducted over communication waves going from the Delta Quadrant to the Alpha Quadrant.
Right.
And it could only go 11 minutes a day.
But I just want to say, I think it's interesting, like now, if you think back to the original Star Trek, that this theme comes from the very original Star Trek, where Spock has to learn how to be a more well-rounded or more expansive person than he was when he originally joined the cast. And you see this is like a recurring theme in Star Trek overall. There's always some character who is having to make that self-exploration and journey to become, well, so in a bad way, more human, because of course we feel we are the pinnacle of whatever. But interestingly, like there is always in every series, there are always these characters who are going from a very closed off, very tight set of confines in what they are willing to do and experience, and often lack empathy for other people because they don't have those kind of feelings, and how they always seem to, the drive is always to make them feel more and appreciate themselves more, mm-hmm. in the same way.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good observation. And I do think, yeah, it was really interesting, because the way the trial ends, and I think it's partially because they only have 11 minutes a day. So, you know, the judge doesn't want to make like constitutional level changes to Federation law over the internet at 11 minutes a day or whatever, because he basically comes around to saying, well, I'm not going to say whether the doctor is a person or not, but I will say that he is an artist and he therefore controls his own work.
Okay, so now you're saying this and I'm thinking, so the end, at the end of this episode, there is this set piece with all of the doctor, you know.
Yeah, the other doctors.
The other doctors who are basically working as slaves.
Yes.
And so it's interesting because as I was watching it, I was like, what is the point of this? But of course, the point of it is that the ruling doesn't go far enough. And there's still more that has to be done to assure that these beings, which are clearly like self-learning AI beings who are more sentient and are able to self-direct in a way that originally I think they were not meant to, and how that's going to have to change eventually, how those beings are looked at, because you can't, in the Star Trek universe, slavery is like a bad thing.
Yeah.
And yet there they are, all working in that horrible mine.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And of course, it's, you know, one EMH, those are the Mark I's. They got retired when the Mark II came out. And
so that's why they're there.
That's why they're in the dilithium mines. The Mark II is, what's his name, the comic, Andy. Wow, I can't remember his last name. The really nerdy guy with the curly blonde hair. And Andy Dick. Anyway, forget about him. But that's where we learn like that the Mark I has been replaced by the Mark II. So the Mark I's just in the, you know, as he says, scrubbing conduits and mining dilithium.
Yep.
But one Mark I comes up to the other one and says, you know, you got to report to the holodeck for a screening. And he says, yeah, I know. Like they're obnoxious to each other, just in the way the doctor is like snippy. And the first Mark I says, yeah, but while you're there, do yourself a favor and check out this holo novel, Photons Be Free. Okay. You have to love the title. Photons Be Free.
I do love the title. Yeah.
I can picture the jacket cover. If it were a book, it would be.
Well, yes. But it also just, I mean, that is that whole theme of like gaining independence and being treated like everybody else. Mm-hmm. That is such a prevalent theme in science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think is one of the reasons why people who love science fiction love science fiction, because this is often. So often, like, there is either a character or it is the whole crux of the story. Like, what's going to happen with these people?
Right.
Like, Blade Runner.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you see it again and again, like iRobot. You just, it's in so many things and in much of contemporary science fiction, which I read a lot of for work. This is a way that these authors are trying to deal with this problem in society of, you know, there are people who are not treated properly.
Yeah.
And it just comes up again and again.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting way to end the episode because it wasn't a sign off of like, yay, everything's good now. Yep. It was like, huh, wonder what's going to happen when all these Mark I's watch the holo novel or play the holo novel.
And there's still like a long way to go.
Yeah.
You know, this may seem like progress is made, and in some ways progress is made, but how many of these are going to actually be writing novels and getting away with the workaround of like, I'm creating something, so I'm deserving of having aegis over it, when in fact it just should be everybody.
Yeah. So one last theme, since we got to this episode to talk about publishing a little, I did think that The publisher was very realistic, you know, for being a bullion and being, you know, in the alpha quadrant. But the way he talked about, you know, the way he was spinning it for the doctor of like what he was going to do and how he liked the stuff.
Right.
I, you know, I've heard that spiel many times.
Because that's their job.
That's their job. But as far as I know, I don't know any cases in publishing where somebody was told they didn't have the rights to at least enter into a contract for the novel. Once they're in the contract, that's another story maybe, but nobody's been accused of not being human enough to write.
Well, but it was interesting because he obviously did have a contract with that publisher.
Yeah.
And so I think that that was part of what was so peculiar about like how that happened, because they'd been talking, they obviously had an agreement to, you know, to publish this thing. And yet he had no idea that the publisher was thinking of him as somebody who he could do whatever he wanted to,
yeah.
You know? But yeah, it is interesting. There are, you know, that is a publisher's job, is to be like the cheerleader, rah-rah person. But also always with an eye to how they're making money for the company.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we definitely have lived through, you know, big, you know, stories / scandals of publishers deciding not to publish something.
Yes.
And this is kind of the opposite of that.
And yes. And that is interesting because in some ways it's kind of like the same thing, in that they believed it should be published, so they were going to publish it because they felt they owned it. Or these other people who were like, well, we don't want to own it because we don't want to publish it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like those situations where they renege on their end of the contract.
Yes.
The publishers.
Yeah. Anyway, there's many, many interesting publishing stories we could talk about, but we are we're going to wrap up this thing while we're still technically talking about Voyager.
Yes.
I have to say, you know, again, how thankful I am that you are here with me in my bedroom in Portland, Oregon, while I spend 95% of my time in a non-ambulatory mode.
Well, it has been a pleasure to be with you. And even though it's like for all the wrong reasons, we live very far apart and we don't really get a chance to spend a lot of time together. So the upside of you having had this horrible surgery is like we have all this time together, which is quite nice.
Yeah. It's been a while since we watched Star Trek together.
It's true.
So, Barb, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jean. It's been fun.
And thank you, listeners, for being here, too. You can find Voyager Revisited online at VoyagerCast.com. You can follow us on Twitter and on micro.blog at Voyager_cast. I will be back again soon. Usually this is where I say I'll be back in 2 weeks, but I have missed several episodes due to this little mishap. So hopefully I will have a chance to record another episode in the not too distant future. Until then, time's up.